Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, episode 74. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Karen, Kristen, and Laura. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
There she is. So we're going to be talking about Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 5, Dreamcatcher, which had a lot more Neil in it than I was expecting, even though we didn't actually see him. And if you want to talk to us about the episode as it airs or after it airs or anything to do with this podcast, you can tweet at us at Onceable now comes to my cell phone. So I could talk to you and interact with you, maybe, if I feel like it. I will definitely talk to you and interact with you. Don't worry. So instant reaction to Dreamcatcher. Karen, what'd you think? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up, but I liked it in general, and I thought it hit all the right beats, and it gave us the right, like, it gave us plenty of answers, and, you know, we're definitely moving the plot forward and all of that. Definitely wasn't my favorite episode, but I can't really find anything wrong with it to say that it was a thumbs down.
All right. And Kristen, what about you?
Pretty much the same thing. It's a thumbs up, not a super crazy enthusiastic thumbs up, but it's a thumbs up. It was good. It was a solid episode. It helped, you know, keep driving things forward, but there are still some things that, you know, are looming. So, yeah, I liked it.
And Laura?
For me, it was actually a big thumbs up. I really, really liked it. I think it's one of the episodes that I actually liked most so far this season. I felt like we really got some intense scenes with multiple people that we don't usually get. So I was really, really pleased with this episode. So I really, really liked it.
Awesome. I'm also going to give it a thumbs up because Merlin is finally here. And I interviewed Elliot Knight like 5.5 weeks ago, and finally he's on screen.
Yeah, there you go.
So big thumbs up for me. Merlin's around. I really liked all of the Regina and Emma stuff, especially the final scene. And I think that they're doing something really interesting with Emma and Henry. So I wasn't pumped with what Emma did, but I am excited to see where it goes. So let's go to favorite quotes. Karen, let's start with you.
Mine comes from Merida because I love Merida so much and I really enjoyed her in this episode. It's when she says, "All a man needs is a sword and one good hand." And it was just such a strong line in and of itself. But aside from that, I just really love Merida's like determination, her positive outlook. Even though her heart is literally in the Dark One's hands, she's not giving up. She's going to do whatever it takes to survive. And hopefully she won't lose herself along the way. I don't think she will. And we can talk about that a little bit later on. But I just love her interactions with Rumple because he's completely useless at this point and she's doing her best. And I love seeing that with her.
Awesome. I'm a little upset you didn't, have a Scottish accent, but that's okay.
No.
Kristen, what was yours?
Mine comes from Regina, but it really is the entirety of the scene with Henry and Regina, and Hook kind of steps in when he mentions his girlfriend, and Regina's like, "Girlfriend, what girlfriend?" And Hook kind of comes in with his little, you know, "Come to me if you have any questions," you know, and Regina says, "Over your dead body." And I about lost it. Like, fabulous, fabulous. Yeah. Perfect reaction from Regina and just a really great, fun little moment.
And I love that she, like, didn't let it go when they left the sheriff's station. She's still outside being like, "No, but wait, what girlfriend?"
Yeah.
I love when totally she, realistic. Like, rolled her eyes when they were, like, ushering her out. She's like, "No, but wait, we need to talk about this." And Hook's just standing there with his little smirk on his face being, I was so embarrassed by him. I was like, "Oh, God, Hook, stop talking, stop talking."
He's fantastic. Laura, what was your favorite line?
My favorite was another Regina line, and it was, if I'm the one, wait, let me try that again. I'm going to botch that. If I'm the one, I'm just messing this up. If I'm the one on the moral high ground, you've fallen quite a ways. It helps if I say it the right way. So I really loved the point where she's just looking at Emma going, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, how did we get to this role reversal point? And that scene with Henry and just the heartbreak was just so wow. And I think that just says so much, as if Emma's gotten to the point where she is justifying messing with Henry's life, is that's for the greater good, then clearly she has fallen a tremendously far away.
Yeah, I agree. And I love how Regina kept referring to her as Ms. Swan in those moments.
That part killed me. I was like, oh, that is such a slap in the face. Not that I blamed Regina at all, but it's like she didn't even know her anymore, and which is fair, completely fair, given what Emma did. But I was like, wow, that is a low blow. It's deserved, but it's a low blow.
Yeah, it was. I loved it. I was like, oh, and she said it twice. It was so good. So my favorite quote from this episode was when Merlin walks into Granny's and David's kind of like, oh, you're Merlin, and he's like, well, what were you expecting? And David's like, someone older. And then Merlin goes, well, let's just say being in a tree, good for your skin. he's very good looking, and he has a great accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, but speaking of Merlin, let's kind of start off with the first scene of this episode, where we get a glimpse of what Merlin was doing right up until the moment he became a tree. And we see him, like, running after the Dark One, and Merlin at this point has control of the dagger, and he wants to put an end to the Dark One because the Dark One killed his first love. And he kind of, you know, he's upset, and he gets pushed, knocked around by the Dark One, and the Dark One eventually gets the upper hand, takes the dagger back, takes a tear from Merlin's cheek, and uses that magic to put him into a tree. And that's kind of how the Dark One, I guess, gained control of back of the dagger up until the moment we saw Rumpel having the dagger. So it must have been passed around quite a bit. Because I don't think that wasn't Zozo, was it?
Yeah, I don't know who it was. I think it was interesting that I was wondering if they put the mask on because they hadn't decided who the Dark One was at that point. And by putting a mask on the person, we just weren't going to know who it was.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, they're playing with this because they're not really sure what to do with it yet.
Yeah. Well, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, we did not see, we don't know who Merlin's first love is, right?
Mm-mm.
So I'm sure that's going to be something they bring up at some point, too.
Yeah, two things about that. One, Kristen and I were talking about this, whether it was the Dark One before Rumpel, and we kind of came to the conclusion it wasn't, just because the mask was so different. So it makes me really curious as to who that was. And two, do we know anything about Merlin's love life at all? I mean, in most of the lore, he sort of just is this, like, I don't know, almost godlike person.
Yeah, and he's fairly he's bewitched by Nimue, who I remember at one point, but it's more like she bewitches him, not that she's, like, killed, so that doesn't really work. So I'm not really sure who Merlin's first love would be.
Yeah,
Nimue is not like a mortal. She's, you know, I don't want to say like witch, but she's like a spirit, like a oh gosh, why can't I even think of what you would say, like you know, like a magical being, basically. She's not a human.
Yeah, I was, the only thing I could think of, I've only really, the most I know about Merlin is from the Disney cartoon, The Sword in the Stone. And he kind of, like, messes with Madame Mim, but I don't think that they're going to make Madame Mim into his lover because she's, like, a little crazy.
My experience with Arthur and Arthurian legend is basically the same, Brittany, so don't worry. Every time I think of Merlin, I think of Madame Mim and the dragon fight and all that.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all I know, too, so this is definitely a big question mark.
I'm sure we'll get more flashbacks. Once Upon a Time loves a good flashback, so maybe that we'll have, like, a Merlin-centric episode.
And I just want to know about, like, the crossover potential. Like, who is it that we know of that they're going to change the story of that'll incorporate her into Merlin's story? I think that would be pretty cool. I always enjoy those things.
Maybe she's a Greek goddess.
Look, I can't live with any more teasers about potential Greek gods or goddesses joining Once Upon a Time, okay? My heart can't handle it.
I mean, it could happen, and it would make some sense, I think. I don't know. We'll see. But that would be an interesting way to kind of tie some of the Greek stuff we've seen into, like, the Arthurian stuff, too.
After we go to the underworld.
Yeah. Because we've seen some connections with the Fury and a couple other things. So it would be interesting to see if they went that
way. And, like I said before, you know, in Greek mythology, people are turned into trees and stuff. So it's connected.
Yep, I really think that that would be a good direction for them to go, especially if they do want to focus 5B or even earlier on some things, you know, from Greek mythology. So that's pretty much all we know about Merlin until later on in the episode. But this sort of triggers, Emma found out all of this information by looking through a dream catcher. And in order to do that, she has to use her dark magic to look into the, you know, the dream catcher. She can see people's memories, but her magic is so powerful that she doesn't actually need to put the dream catcher, like, over someone's head. She can peer into their memories without doing that. And this is how she discovers that David and Mary Margaret were put under a spell by Arthur. So we didn't have to watch that drag out at all, which I was grateful for. I don't know about you guys, but as soon as Emma showed up and froze them, I was like, yes.
Yeah, I was waiting for a cut to the chase on that too. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that was awesome. And then it becomes Emma and Regina against Arthur, even though Arthur's kind of off screen. What they want to do is free Merlin before Arthur has a chance to. And in order to do that, Regina comes up with the idea that, okay, if a tier of the first love was used to cast the spell, perhaps they can use the same thing to use a spell, like, against that. So they're going to create this potion, but they need the tier of a lost first love. Regina volunteers to go and submit herself to reliving Daniel's death. So we get to watch that again. Did anybody have any, like, real emotional response to that? I was kind of like, I'm over it. And I think it was because we've seen so much of Regina grow from that moment that I didn't think I wasn't affected by it. So how could Regina be? But I wanted to know what you guys thought of reliving that.
I was more interested in Emma's reaction to it. Like, Emma's heard all of these stories and she's heard about what Snow did and how that brought about the death of Daniel. And so I was, more than anything, knowing that Emma was going to see it, I was kind of interested to see how she reacted. Now, she is the dark one, but I was pleasantly surprised with how affected she was by it. So, you know, it's just one more thing to kind of bring Regina and Emma together. They've both lost first loves, and so it's like, now I'm hoping that somehow this similarity between them will help maybe down the line to help Emma, like, pull herself out of the darkness. We'll see. But
that's a really, really good point. I didn't even think about that moment. I was sort of like, oh, Cora's back in a way that we have already seen her. But yeah, that's a really good point, because Emma has been, up until this point, like, slipping further and further away. We see her kind of on her own a lot, and she has been dabbling with the dark magic, even though, you know, all of these warnings have been like, don't use it, don't use it, don't use it. She's like, well, I have all this free time in my hands and I don't have a babysitter. So, yeah, I think that was a really important moment for her. So that's good. Good. So they get the first tier, And as they're making this potion, it doesn't work. So Henry kind of plays a huge role in this moment. And in order to get Henry to play this huge role, we have to break Henry's heart, unfortunately. So let's get this over with. It was awful. I know that the creators teased that Henry's heartbreak was going to be the worst of this season. It was pretty bad. What did you guys think of Violet when Henry was still in the stable? Like, you know, they're kind of like hanging out. Did you think that she was into him at that moment? Or
it didn't seem that she was totally like right into him. And then when it all went down, like I was literally on Twitter going, oh no, Henry got friend zoned. Like I was upset for Henry. I was like, no, this was going so well. How did this happen? I was very upset.
Yeah. And I really thought that it was genuine because in the weekly update of Britney Falls for Everything, I fell for this.
Me too. Don't worry.
But they do sometimes on Once Upon a Time do what I call the bad acting moment of I am under a spell and I am going to look out of character and do this weird thing. And like you didn't, I don't feel like there was a tell or anything that you could have figured out really that she didn't sincerely mean it. And sometimes they really do have that where you're like, oh, all right, I get it. They're under a spell. And I don't think with this, she would have known.
Yeah, and I think that they set it up so well, the way that they had it play out through memory later on in Storybrooke. I think that was actually the first time this season I was like, yeah, I really liked the way they connected the worlds and were sort of like, you know, breaking that wall between what happened and where we are now. So I thought it was a really great setup. Unfortunately for Henry had to suffer in order for it to play out the way it did, but... So Henry kind of like runs into Violet's her name, right? I keep wanting to call her Victoria. I know it's not Victoria. So he runs into Violet's father and basically gets like slammed for not being from that world and not being brave enough and, you know, having to justify himself as a writer. And he's like, well, what are you going to do when an ogre comes for my daughter? You're going to stab them with your pen. I laughed a little bit. Thought that was great. But at the same time, it's a point. Like, he's in this society where he doesn't really know anything that's going on. But I think that his moms give him pretty good advice. Like, you know, stop trying to change yourself. Like, you know, woo her with the one song that you know. And it works. In his mind, at least when he is able to ask her out for a date. So what did you guys think of him, like, you know, trying to conform to the world? Were you like, yes, Henry, you better learn how to use a sword because I think it'll come in handy? Or were you like, no, I'm with your moms?
This whole part played out so, so well because I kept going back and forth. I really saw everybody's point of view. Like, with Violet's father, I was like, you know what? He has a point. Like, in their world, being able to have a sword and know how to use it is kind of a big deal. And I really wanted Henry to get into that, to become a sword fighter, not in place of him as a writer, but I think, you know, it's an important skill to have considering who he's related to and everything that's happened to him since Emma arrived in Storybrooke in season one. And then, you know, Regina and Emma showed up and they're like, just be yourself. Isn't that the person that she liked anyway? And I was like, you know what? That's a really good point. Like, I kind of wish he could have done both, like learn the sword fighting, but also kept with like the, I'm a writer. It's a big deal. And, you know, it's kind of cool. And it sets me apart from everybody else because let's be real. Kid was suave at that dinner. Like, he was kind of awkward and it was a little hard to watch, but he was nervous, but he did everything right with the candles and with the soda and the music and the movies, and it was so good.
Yeah, my biggest question though, they were in Camelot for a couple of weeks at this point. How did he still have a charge on that cell phone? Oh, sorry.
Potatoes. You can build.
There you go.
You can build a charger with a potato.
Yeah, maybe Granny had
Or maybe,
Oh, go ahead.
He has like a portable one. We've all got portable chargers. He had it in his pocket when they left Granny's. That's how.
Yeah.
Totally it.
Or maybe Granny had like a generator or something.
Yeah. Wasn't there something about like the soda was still cold or it was still fresh? Like there was something about that. I forget.
Oh,
the lasagna.
Yeah.
It was all about the lasagna. Like it was still frozen, so he could heat it up and ta-da.
Oh, only on Once Upon a Time podcast can you yell, "It's the lasagna." Oh man. But yeah, I agree. He had all the right moves for that date. I was like, good for you, Henry. Like I was like, I would have had a great time on that date. But yeah, it doesn't really turn out in Henry's favor. Violet, says like, you know, "Oh, Henry, I thought we were, you know, just hanging out as friends and I really appreciated that." So she didn't like crush his heart. She doesn't say like, "Ew, I want nothing to do with you." But at the same time, for a kid who's finally interacting with someone his own age for the first time and like, you know, starting to like be attracted to someone and feeling all those first pangs of love, it's like she ripped his own heart out and stomped all over it in Granny's. Yeah, and I felt so bad for him, especially when he shows up to his mom's and they're both like, you know, in the midst of this battle against Arthur, and yet they're still like, "Oh, Henry, what happened?" Yeah, so now Regina has the smarts to kind of like grab the tear. Did anyone like sense that this was a setup up till this point, or were you still kind of shocked when we finally got the reveal of, "Oh, Emma actually put this whole thing in motion"?
Totally.
Yeah,
shocked.
I was snowed. Yeah, I had no idea.
Good. I'm really liking that. Once Upon a Time is fooling more than me. Yeah. So Henry's tear, because it was a first love, and Regina's was also a first love, but it was a fresher first love. It like just happened that day. His tear was strong enough to make the potion work. And Emma kind of does this thing where one arm is dark and one arm is light. Do you think that she was using both light and dark magic to get Merlin out?
Yeah, I think she was. I mean, just the way that those like strands looked, I think that absolutely is true, where she was trying to use the light magic to counterbalance the dark magic.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting to see that she could still tap into that light magic, even though she is the dark one. So I think that kind of shows, like, it's sort of like a timeline of where she is with her magic. Like, she still has that connection to the light magic, but she hasn't let the darkness completely take over, yet she can still tap into a little bit of its energy, and it's a lot to handle. But this allows Merlin to be freed from the tree, and Arthur kind of shows up and he's pissed that Merlin is just standing there. And he gets upset because he says that he was led on a false prophecy, and he takes out his sword, and Merlin's like, "Listen, you know you can't affect me with a broken sword, so just put it away." And Arthur kind of like shrugs it off and walks away. But do you think that Merlin did send him on a false prophecy, or do you think that there's something more going on there?
I have a feeling that Merlin can do what Rumple has done this entire series, which is sort of see the big picture and pull the strings that need to be pulled in order to get everything to fall into line. And then again, you know, you guys know how betrayed I was with Arthur. I would hope that Merlin is still on the side of good and that he's pulling strings in everybody's favor for the right reasons and everything. But I wouldn't be surprised if he led Arthur down this path to teach him a lesson about humility, which Arthur clearly needs to learn, but maybe also to teach Emma some things as well.
That makes a really good point. I also, I agree. I very much see Merlin as the teacher and kind of like that, I don't want to say godlike figure, but just he's not driving the action, but he's sort of like the moral compass of the action, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like that's sort of where he's at with things.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Especially like the way you phrased it, Karen, in the beginning where you said he's kind of like Rumpel in the way that he can see something much bigger unfolding, especially since we had the magical movie Usher kind of tell Emma that this whole thing was going to happen. So he does see a lot more than, you know, just Arthur's kind of like one pinpoint in his whole plan, or, you know, prophecy plan. Who knows how much he's actually controlling it at this point. But it'll be interesting to see what his role becomes in this whole story, because up until this point, it's just, since last season, it's been Merlin, and this is, we've only really had him on screen for 2 minutes total, probably, this whole season. So I'm excited for him to be more involved as we move along. But going back to Storybrooke for a minute. So in Storybrooke, we kind of have everyone gathered in the sheriff station, and Percival's dead. His little, Arthur's like henchman, page, squire person is gone because he drank that potion last week. And Arthur's kind of like, well, I guess he had the magic bean and he disappeared. So yeah, they are kind of like, oh, everyone's in bad spirits. Let's throw a giant carnival in Vancouver, film it, waste a lot of our budget and show like 3 minutes of it. I was like, this was such a waste. Like, you have all those background actors and cotton candy machines and balloons and hay, and like, they weren't even at the carnival.
Right. Which I love how that all like appears too, because clearly they have that so much in the town, you know, that they can't leave. Yeah, it was a little strange too. I mean, I like the idea that they were going to do some sort of welcoming celebration dance thing, but you're right. I would have liked to have seen more transpire with that.
Yeah, especially for Henry. I think it would have made that story a little more redeemable, and maybe they cut it for that exact purpose. They didn't want Emma to, like, they didn't want Henry to have it work out so well in Storybrooke, because then it would take away what Emma did, maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, they have this celebration and, like, you know, Camelot's having a good time. But then we have our heroes, Belle, Hook, and Regina. Are they the only three who go? I'm trying to place David and Mary Margaret in the basement, but I can't. Were they there?
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
No, they were not there.
Okay,
no.
Good. I'm not, like, completely missing my
mind. Yeah, no. It was just, it was just Regina, Hook, and Belle.
Okay, cool. So Belle wants to know where gold is. That's what sparks this whole thing. And they go to Emma's house because they believe that she's keeping him in the basement, which she was. But in order to get into the house, they need to, like, there's a protection spell. Emma won't let anyone into her house that she doesn't trust. And she still trusts Henry. So Regina summons Henry's scarf. They are able to put it over the door handle and get through. Not a very good spell by Emma, but that's okay. So they get inside. They open the door to go to the basement. They find Excalibur there. And Hook is kind of like, well, why don't we just, like, take the sword out? And Regina stops him and says, I know, like, she says something wittier than what I'm going to say, but she's like, oh, well, I'm stopping you because it's probably booby-trapped and it could save your life. And he's like, whoa, you've changed. So do you think that Hook would have been able to pull the sword out if he tried? Because I do. But I want to hear what you guys think.
What are the stipulations with the sword?
Well, Emma needs a hero to pull it out. Now, the first time it was prophesized that, like, one person could pull it out, and it was Arthur, because he would go on to be this great king. But right now, I don't think there's anything besides a hero. Like, I don't think that there's any other fine print.
Yeah, I don't know that Hook could. I feel like that it has to be a really great hero with a pure heart and pure intent. And as heroic as Hook's intentions may be at times, he is still very much I feel, sort of out for himself. I feel like if anyone's going to pull that sword out, it's going to be Henry. I feel like he's, like, feel like you need to have, like, the purest heart to pull that out. And I still feel like that very much belongs to Henry.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's a good point. I really thought, though, for, like, a split second, I was like, oh, he's going to be able to pull this out, be no problem. Everything's going to, you know, advance from here. But, yeah, Regina stops him, so it's one of those the world may never know moments.
Well, I'm curious as to whether maybe by the end of this whole plot line later on, maybe Hook is able to take it out. And they want us to remember all the times where he had an opportunity and didn't get to try. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm kind of wondering if this is not like a red herring. It's not really foreshadowing, but it's just one more thing to remember. Like, he was going to try, but he didn't. And maybe later on down the line, they regret not letting him try, or, you know what I mean? So that it's just something, I think they put it in so that we'd all think about it and then move on from there for now. So I'm hoping it comes back into play.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think he's maybe not done as much as Regina, but he has certainly gone a long way to become on the side of, like, you know, take a turn for the side of good and do all of that stuff. And he's kind of like, you know, in the dumps right now. So I think he kind of needed that boost from being able to pull the sword out, but he'll get it, you know, he'll figure it out somewhere else. But then, speaking of Hook just, you know, bashing his spirits, goes upstairs and Regina finds the dream catcher, and immediately Hook's like, well, you know, Neil used to make those and, or have those, and they're supposed to, you know, be able to ward off bad thoughts. And that's initially what I thought that these were doing for Emma when she had a bunch of them in Camelot hanging from the walls. I thought she was trying to keep Rumple out of her thoughts, but they have this other power, like we mentioned before, where they're able to look into people's memories and or store people's memories. Regina recognizes this and uses some magic to look into the one that's kept on the table. And it reveals how Emma took Violet's heart back in Camelot and controlled the circumstances of the state. So when do you think this fell in the timeline? Do you think it fell before she even gave Regina the chance to, you know, give that tear? Like, or do you think it took place after that and Emma was kind of like, this memory is not going to be strong enough?
That's a good question. That's basically what I was going to ask too. I think that Emma basically knew that Regina's memory wasn't going to be strong enough. Whether or not she realized it as she was watching it or before she watched it, I don't think really matters. The big, like, point here that I think makes this even worse than it already is, which is saying something, is the fact that Emma let Regina believe the entire time that her tear was going to save them. She was allowed to watch that memory and go through all of that heartache all over again. Meanwhile, Emma's sort of just sitting there going, yeah, this isn't going to work. She doesn't stop her. She doesn't say, let's try something else. She puts Regina through all of that and then goes and breaks her son's heart. And it's hard for me to take that because I felt like at that time, Emma was still Emma. And I think she was more of the dark one than any of us realized. And, or if she wasn't, that kind of makes it even worse. I'm having a hard time comprehending that Emma would be able to do that, even considering as the dark one, how much she still cares about Henry.
See, I'm kind of wondering if Emma didn't have the plan before she saw Regina's memory. Like, letting Regina think that she wasn't plotting to make Regina think that her tear was going to save them. She thought it could. But after seeing the memory, I think maybe Emma realized or thought that maybe there was a possibility of it not working because she teared up watching the memory, yes. And she, because she was so excited to get the tear from Regina, like, she was on it. And then after that is when, like when they're standing by the tree is when we kind of know that, we know now that when she was with Regina by the tree, she had already put things into motion with Henry. So somewhere along the line, she put together that maybe because Regina wasn't strong enough, like maybe her memory, because it wasn't fresh and it wasn't still painful, because Regina was able to like tear up about it and then put it behind her, maybe it wouldn't be enough. You know what I mean? Rather than it being a concocted plan the entire time to deceive Regina, because I didn't feel that way.
Yeah, and I think I'm still giving Emma the benefit of the doubt at this point, because I just don't want her to be that evil this quickly, because we already have that extreme in Storybrooke where Emma, like, right, is this awful person. But in Camelot, there's still, like, that hope of, like, her, like, someone being able to talk to her and someone being able to get through to her and, like, you know, still find that speck of good, that I don't want it to go away that quickly. But I do see what you're saying, Karen, and I do see what you're saying, Kristen, and I really don't know where she was, like, when she decided to, you know, have a backup plan. So frustrating.
Well, my other thing is, mm-hmm, why did Emma have that dream catcher in a box on the table at home? Like, it's the only one in there. She had all those dream catchers in Camelot, but that memory came back with her and she kept it out on the table.
Well, she also has that shed that we saw.
Right.
With,
but
all,
I mean,
of,
like,
them.
That memory was important enough to her to keep, like,
yeah,
nearby.
It's not with the others. Exactly. There's a reason. Or, like, she's, to me, like, the only reason you would have it out like that is it's sort of like your bedside reading. It's there handy for you to look at constantly.
Yeah, maybe she, like, senses herself drifting too far. Like maybe, because she has a couple of these moments, like, where she's holding the flower after, you know, we see that scene with her and Hook in the flower, like, area. And then we kind of see this dream catcher left out. And it's sort of like, maybe these are like these little reminders that are kind of, she's trying to prove, like, maybe test herself to be like, can I still feel like I did before I became this monster? Because I don't think that that dream catcher is the same dream catcher we saw her with when she went out to the shed, because I think that that one was Henry's side of the memories. Because these are Violet's, right? And so I think that Henry's memories were that other one, because, like, we see her cry when she's holding that other dream catcher. But I don't know. I want to see everyone's memories, because I want to know what's been going on just as much as the rest of the town.
Most definitely.
Yes, so as Regina finishes watching this memory, Henry walks in, and that was unintentional on everyone's part. They were not trying to reveal this to Henry. That was a complete happenstance. Like, he just happened to walk in as they were watching it, which I think is good to know, because it's not the town versus Emma. It just, it happened. It came as news to everyone at the same time. Yes. So before all this happens, though, Henry and Emma do share a little outing. They have their own little operation that happens. And we find out that, you know, Peter Pumpkin Eater is a person who also exists in the Once Upon a Time universe. He has a pumpkin farm in Storybrooke, which is, you know, because why not? Why don't we have a pumpkin farm in Storybrooke? It's fall.
And he likes to party, apparently.
And he likes to party, yes. But yeah, we kind of find out that Emma is still up, like, Camelot wasn't enough. She has to kind of, you know, she's trying to make up for her mistakes in Camelot, but by, like, setting Henry up to be a false hero. So we find out that Emma let Violet's horse out, and then that gave Henry the opportunity, you know, to step up and find the horse and save the day and be the hero in Storybrooke But Henry chose to enlist Emma because he wants to, you know, he's not giving up on her yet. He wants to find a way to bring back his mom. And so he does that by, you know, sending them out on a mission. And they go, and he kind of takes over when the horse is freaking out because, you know, horses don't respond to evil that well. They can sense it. And I thought that that whole scene was great, though. I thought for a second that he was getting through to her, and, you know, she doesn't seem like a horrible, horrible person when she's with Henry, even though now we know all these things.
No, she's almost like Regina was, like, at the very, very beginning in the first season, when, mm-hmm. like, you know, Henry was, like, the one thing that she really cared about, even in using weird ways to care about him, but it's very much that, I think.
Yeah, so we kind of get this contrast between Emma and Regina that's been set up through the whole episode, and it comes to a head at the end when Emma goes over to Regina's and is like, hey, I'm here to see Henry. And Regina has to explain to her, like, listen, Henry knows what happened in Camelot. We saw the dream catcher. What is going on with you? Like, this whole scene was just, I thought it was fantastically, it was just fantastic from start to finish. Acting wise, dialogue, it was just very revealing for both of the characters. Because right now what we have is Regina, as she says, is the person on the moral high ground. So how far could Emma have possibly fallen that, you know, Regina's the one she has to turn to? But I want to know what you guys think of the scene. Because I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great way to kick off going into episode 6. But yeah, I just want to hear what you guys thought. So someone chime in.
I loved it. I thought it was amazingly done, like you said. And the crazy thing is that Regina's done a lot of horrible things in her life, but she's always been there for Henry, whether he liked it or not, whether he trusted her or not. She always did the right thing by him, and I think she's floored that Emma would do this to him. It is like the lowest of low in her book. And I mean, I guess you can argue, like, you know, murdering people is bad too or whatever, but in her eyes, you don't touch Henry. You do whatever it takes to keep Henry happy because that's your son. And that's something that Regina and Emma share. They can really understand that. And I think that's, you know, that's why she calls her Miss Swan, because she's like, I don't even recognize you anymore.
Well, like, even the whole time when Regina was very Miss Overprotective Henry, and Henry is my son and you can't come near him, I don't feel like she ever manipulated Henry within a situation. During that whole period, she was always manipulating other people to protect Henry's world. But it wasn't, like, it was a different kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Almost, like, this was just so, like, kind of very specifically direct versus any time Regina did something, it was very roundabout. And I don't feel like it was as direct. Plus, I also feel like Henry's, I mean, did he say that he was 15 years old, or did I just imagine that? He's 15 years old now, right? So if he's more, I think there's a difference between messing around with a teenager's life than there was messing around with, like, an 8-year-old's life. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's definitely a difference there.
Right. Like, that's more or less how I was seeing it, is Regina never manipulated Henry or used Henry, basically. And in this instance, Emma used Henry to get what she needed. Like, right, Regina would sometimes, like, skirt the issue. Like, she would tell things to other people so that, you know, like, Henry never was used by Regina to get something. She was always very careful of that, and Emma straight out used him. And I think that's just, it's way beyond the line for Regina. Like, you don't use him. Like, that's just no.
Yeah, I think the closest we saw Regina come to doing anything to Henry directly was the time that she considered, like, you know, putting that spell on him to make him love her, because she was just getting so nervous about everyone leaving her and no one actually caring about her. And she's like, well, I can make him love me, but she didn't. Yeah, and this is just a completely, she's like using Henry to get something that's just, I mean, yes, this is horrible, but I am like, you know, almost justifying it. Yes, she's doing it in order to free herself from the Dark One, but there are other options. Like, there, you didn't need to do that. Like, you don't need to use your son. Yes, you can say that you're using it to better yourself and help everyone, but it doesn't matter. That's your kid. Like, it really bothered me, but I'm glad Regina put her in her place and was like, no, you're not seeing Henry. Like, I don't care. And that scene where Emma's walking away and Henry's just looking at her through the window was horrible and sad. Ugh, God. So it'll be interesting to see how their relationship progresses in Storybrooke, because right now in Camelot, everything seems to be okay. No one knows anything that's going on. Whereas here, now their relationship is strained. So it's kind of odd where the action happened, they're fine. And where the action didn't happen, they're not fine.
Yeah.
classic Once Upon a Time. But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to see where this goes, and especially now that you have Regina really against Emma. She's against Emma and the Dark One, but it's almost like it's taking, she's trying to distance herself from hating Emma by referring to her as Ms. Swan, because, like, I don't think that if Emma were to come back, how would she see Emma? You know, I think she needs to treat it as this, like, other being, because there is always the chance that, you know, when Emma comes back, people are going to be mad at her for things that the Dark One made her do. But how much is she really separated from the Dark One?
That's my question. And I think that's why it hurt so much that she did what she did while in Camelot, because I still feel like she was mostly Emma. And yes, the Dark One is influencing her, but she's still taking those actions. And I mean, even when Rumpel was the Dark One, he still had those high notes that he would hit. And we'd be like, oh, you know, he's redeemable, or like he's changing. And you can really see the real Rumpel in there. And then he would go back to his old ways. And I realize, I mean, it's we've compared it to this before, but it's like an addiction. When you have an addiction to something, you're almost not yourself, but how many times can you make that excuse before you have to be like, look, it is kind of your decision. And like Merlin said at the end of the episode, you have to want to change. And I don't know if something else happened in between, but clearly Emma's not ready to let go of it yet. And I think that's got to be partially her fault. I don't think that's all the Dark One. I mean, Emma has to take some of the blame there.
Yeah, she allowed herself to, like, get a good taste of the darkness for a while by, like, not controlling her emotions and not really, like, you know, shutting herself off from people. And, yeah, it's hard. She's dealing with this whole new thing that no one really understands. But at the same time, she's in this interesting position where Merlin kind of poses the question, like, every part of your heart has to be in this to, like, want to separate from the Dark One. And you just know immediately that that's not where she is right now. Not even because we know what happens in the future, but because in that moment you see it in her face.
Yeah. Like, her eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't say that right now.
I also love that Emma kind of empowered Regina to be the person who separates, like, this Emma that we're seeing, she has to look at her a different way. Like, Emma anointed her that person when she gave her the dagger and said, I trust that you'll do what has to be done. And so it's like she almost gave Regina permission to be the one who cuts her off and be the one who draws the line. And I like thinking back to Emma giving her that, like, honoring her with the dagger, like, she definitely made the right choice, because Regina's putting her foot down now, and I can't wait to see where it goes from there.
I'm excited to see where it goes, but I'm also not looking forward to the moment where Emma clearly does something to get the dagger back in Camelot. Because that's going to be another one of these moments where we're like, she's going to set Regina up, and it's going to be horrible.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that, yeah.
But I think it's a, I think that this, like, as we're unpacking it, this whole narrative is just really interesting. And they're going to, like, a really new place this season. And I, overall, I really like it. I am, because I'm nervous for characters, we're seeing a lot of consequences. And I think that's such a difference between, like, Anna and Elsa are going to stop by, and then we're going to forget about them. And the Queens of Darkness are going to stop by, and then we're going to forget about them.
Right. You know what? I think that really, that's what I think really bugs me, is like, there are some really cool characters that are coming up. And just even this whole, like, Karen said too, how much she loves Merida. I really love Merida, and I haven't seen Brave, and it's kind of bumming me out to know that she's sort of probably just a plot device that we're not going to have after, you know, a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Well, while we have Merida, we should probably talk about her. She kind of is, well, she's not kind of, she is under the Dark One's control as of right now. And she is tasked with the unfortunate mission to take Mr. Gold out into the woods and train him to be brave. So she's not really given a syllabus, like, you know, Dark One 101, how to make someone brave. She is sort of like, okay, well, I come from a movie named Brave. I guess I am brave. I'll figure out something. The way I know how to do that is to make you fight for something. Well, right now, Rumble can barely stand. He is whining. He's tired. He's achy. He doesn't believe in himself. We're kind of seeing the coward that we had in all of those flashbacks reemerge, and he kind of just wants to go home and cry. But Merida's not taking it, because she has all of these threats hanging over her. Like, if she doesn't do this and she dies because the Dark One is fed up with her, she can't save her brothers, she can't restore her kingdom. Like, there's a lot riding on this. So instead of complaining, she is kicking it into high gear and not taking Rumple's crap. She knocks him out cold and is like, I'll be back for you, I'm gonna figure this out myself. She goes and finds the storybook, is flipping through, does a little research, figures out what is most important to Rumple, goes into Gold's antique shop and, you know, grabs an item, goes back to the forest, wakes him up, and teases him with the chipped cup. This is when we see a different side of Rumple come out, and clearly Merida's plan is working. So that was a nice little synopsis for everyone. But I know you guys really like Merida. So what did you think of her tactics here and the way she's handling this situation? We kind of touched on it a little bit in favorite quotes, but now we can really get into more detail.
I liked that it was basically like, to be brave, you're not being brave for yourself. You're fighting for something more altruistic than that. And that seemed to be what she was trying to inspire in Rumple, that it was him fighting for a precious memory, a bond between him and Belle, and that was what was going to make him brave. Not like, being brave isn't just picking up a sword, it's why you're picking up a sword. And I feel like that's like what she's trying to get him to embrace, because just because you're swashbuckly, I mean, you could be physically brave, but it's about more than that.
I like that line. It's not you picking up a sword, it's why you pick up a sword. That's really good. And I feel like that's exactly where Merida stands. Like, she's doing all of this because she cares so much about her family and she needs to rescue them. And she has that line in there about, you know, she's going to do whatever it takes to survive. And it kind of bothered me, because I was like, okay, fair, she doesn't want to die, like, she's going to do what she has to do. But then, and correct me if I'm wrong, but she had a line later on where she said, I'm going to make you, you know, brave enough and strong enough to fight the Dark One. It wasn't to become the Dark One's hero. Like, I think she has another plan in the back of her head. She's manipulating the situation to work in her favor and make Rumple brave enough and strong enough to actually go against Emma. Did I interpret that correctly?
Yeah, that's what I think she absolutely does have an ulterior motive. I don't think we quite, I think yours is a logical guess to it. I don't know that it was spelled out quite that explicitly, but I think that's a very reasonable guess based on what we were given.
Either that, or she's at least trying to goad him, saying, if you're going to stand up to the Dark One, you have to have some sort of bravery. Like, if you don't want to do all of this, the stuff that she's going to make you do, we've got to get somewhere first, because as it is right now, she's just going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until you do what she wants. You know what I mean? So at the very least, she was trying to jumpstart him, like something. And let me just tell you, the whole time she was holding that cup, I was freaking out. Like, if anything happens to the cup, you're in trouble.
Yeah, seriously. I was like, that better not smash. That better not smash.
Right. Like, that's important right there. We don't mess with the cup.
Yeah, we may not like gold or Rumple that much, but we know better than to mess with the cup.
Yeah.
And Karen, you were right. She says, we've got a long way to go before you're ready to take on Emma. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, she does have clear. I mean, Merida wants to crush the Dark One as much as the next person, especially because she's preventing her from, you know, completing her own mission, which is, you know, to help her family out. And we still don't know why she was in Arthur's dungeon either. So we have that to take into consideration as well. We know what she's up to in Storybrooke, and Emma clearly brought her back with her, maybe unintentionally, because maybe she didn't know that she was in Arthur's dungeon. But yeah, we have Merida and Storybrooke working on her skills to get Emma out of the picture, which is kind of a bold thing to say when someone has your heart. Because Emma can kind of listen in at any moment, and she's like, okay, Rumple, listen. I don't know if Emma can hear me right now, but we're gonna, you know, work on, you know, taking her down. Yeah, so hopefully that pans out. The preview for next week, there's a bear coming, which is very brave-esque. Laura, there are bears and Brave.
I have to tell you, I was so flipping confused with the bear. I was like, what is up with the bear? I was very confused. So if you are not a Brave person, you're like, I don't get the bear thing at all.
Yeah. In Brave, a quick little rundown. In Brave, Merida accidentally turns her mother and three brothers into bears. And there's this bear who, like, you know, is evil and not like, and they can't talk or anything like that. But this guy, evil king guy, was turned into a bear a long time ago. And, like, it's actually a really terrifying Pixar bear. So in the preview, they did a pretty good job of recreating that bear.
Yeah, I was like, impressed.
That's horrible. You're turned into a bear? Okay, then. Good to know.
Yeah, it's a really, really touching scene when the mom and Merida are, you know, learning to bond as bear and daughter. And the Scottish music just does not help, which Laura.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, Laura, you would really like this movie. They have it has such great music.
Cool. I should definitely watch. I mean, I tried to do it, like, last year I got through without watching Frozen, so I was trying to see if I could appreciate it without seeing Brave. But I really like Merida, aside from the fact that they have saddled her with the worst colored wig ever. I can deal with the really bad fake curls, but the color, like, I'm sorry, no one's hair is that color. That's driving me crazy. But other than that, I love Merida.
Yeah, I think maybe wait till the season, till like maybe 5A is done and then watch it. Just so, like, you know, you're still.
Yeah, I can still just, yeah, I'm trying to appreciate it without. But I really do love her a lot. Like, I am very into this character. I really like her very, very much more than I liked the two Frozen characters last year.
Yeah, but the soundtrack is fantastic. I listen to that sometimes. I have it in my iTunes. It's very good. Yeah, so that's kind of where we're at. So next week we're going to introduce the bears, and Rumple's going to have to fight a little bit harder, use some of his Merida skills. And yeah, we're going to deal with all the fallout from this week. But I think, like we were saying, like, this season's taken a really dark turn, and I'm kind of into it. Any final thoughts before we head on? Karen, you want to talk about Hades a little bit?
Oh my god. I keep forgetting, and then something will remind me and I'll just, like, freak out. So yeah, I should pull up your article, actually. Let me do that, and then I can just be
very
excited.
Well, while you're doing that, I want to give a round of applause to whoever is now doing a better job with the Once Upon a Time special effects, because while Emma's magic was way different than we've seen magic be used before, I liked it. Like the dark and light magic and how it was all like almost stringy. Like it looked different, but I still thought it was a cool effect. So
we were like, at least it wasn't a smoke monster.
Oh my gosh. So, seriously, for real. Yeah, I agree. That was an absolute, that was a plus as far as I was concerned, without question.
Yeah, like they haven't had the best track record of special effects, but big thumbs up to whoever's working on it now because it was really nice.
Yes, and maybe you can incorporate your newfound skills into Hades' hair, which is very important. He must have the hair. So the little blurb that they gave was, the show is casting mysterious, dangerous, and vindictive godlike figure known obscurely as Distinguished Gentleman, or DG. Given that series co-creator Eddie Kitsis summed up season B as hell, which quickly sparked speculation that the ABC series next will brave the underworld, one must wonder if they're thusly casting a very dapper devil. That was straight from TV Line and the person that was writing it up. I would love if it was Hades. I think it makes so much sense given what we've seen so far. And I mean, he lords over the underworld, so it just makes sense. The fact that they're saying Distinguished Gentleman, though, like, I wonder if they're going to put their own twist on the character, but God, I really need it to be Hades, like Disney Hades.
Yeah, and I was thinking today, too, I thought about this after I wrote up the article, but him and, like, you know how I really want Merida and Robin to just have, like, a shootout with their bow and arrows? Well, Hades and Regina could have, like, a fireball out because they both can, like, shoot fire from their hands, so.
Oh my God, I need this. Like, I didn't realize how much I needed that in my life, but I think we need this.
And I really think we need the three, like, you know, the what are they called, Karen? The
Fates?
Yeah, the Fates. Because that would be so cool.
It would be. And, like, I mean, I realize that a lot of Disney movies have the same sort of, like, humor and lightness about them, but Hercules is really funny, and it's really, like, obnoxiously strange in a lot of places, and I feel like that's where Once Upon a Time is. Like, Once Upon a Time, you kind of have to just step back and be like, okay, yes, on the surface this is ridiculous, but once you get into it, like, it's actually pretty good. And I just feel like that storyline would fit so well into it. Plus, I really need a live-action Meg in my life, and I need her to be really sassy and just like, ugh, perfect. I just need it. Please, please, Once Upon a Time.
With the hair.
Yes.
It's all about the hair.
It is.
For both characters.
Between Hades and her. Yeah, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about the hair.
And we don't really need Hercules. Like, he can stay.
I mean, I could live without Hercules. It would be cool. But if we have Hades and Meg, I mean, life made, I can just go off and be happy forever.
I really do hope it comes true. It didn't take much, you know, it wasn't like I was like digging for hints of ways to make this work. It works on a surface level.
Yeah.
So,
and shout out to your article, which was beautiful, and it had, Hercules gifts in it, and it had a lot of Hades puns, and I loved it.
I know, I went on Twitter and you like first linked to the article, which I greatly appreciate, but then I was scrolling and I kept seeing like quotes from my article coming up as tweets. I was like, oh, I'm glad you
I was so excited. And I'm just pretending that you wrote it explicitly for me.
I did. I made sure, because I almost forgot about it, because we were talking about it. When were we talking about? During Rewatchable. And I was like, oh, crap, I almost forgot about the Hades article. So I hope that happens. I hope it pans out and they're able to get Hades for – this won't happen till they're casting now. So it won't happen till after the – either for the winter finale or sometime in the spring. So
I can wait. I can wait.
Keep an eye out. Let's just hope that you know, Henry's had a rough go of it, and I kind of brainstormed that maybe someone would have to go to the underworld to retrieve him if he accidentally dies.
I was just thinking, I was just thinking, who's going to have to die for us to go to the underworld to try and get him back? Because yeah. someone is probably, you know, like, that's the logical leap. So, yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. Let's not think about that, though. There's a lot going on. There's enough darkness going on without us plotting to kill someone.
Sure.
Especially Henry. Oh, my gosh.
I know. I really thought it would be Henry, though, because then, you know, it would be up to Emma to go and get him and... You know, all right. Okay, so next week we have another episode. I don't remember what it is called. Oh, The Bow and the Bear. The Bow and the Bear.
Very appropriate.
Probably going to be a Brave-centric episode, which will be really cool. And then we're inching up to that two-hour episode where we have a bunch of awesome ladies coming in. Mulan will be back soon, and
yes,
yeah, we have a lot of cool stuff coming up. We have Hook's father. They were just filming that not too long ago. Yeah, I'm excited. There's a lot of good stuff coming up.
I may be most excited for Mulan just because I have a Mulan mug that I can drink hot cocoa with cinnamon out of, which I may have already done for this week's episode.
Yeah, you did.
So I'm going to do that in her honor when she comes as well.
I just want Red back. I really just want
Red. She's coming.
I know. I just want Red.
She is coming. All right. So, yeah, we'll pick up next week with our bears and all of that nonsense. So until then, I am Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Adios, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.